words silly and unrealistic were redefined when I learned that St. Nicholas travels with what was consistently described as 6 to 8 black men. I asked several Dutch people to narrow it down, but none of them could give me an exact number. It was always 6 to 8, which seems strange considering they've had hundreds of years to get a decent head count. The 6 to 8 black men were characterized as personal slaves until the mid-1950s, when the political climate changed and it was decided that instead of being slaves, they were just good friends. I think history has proven that something usually comes between slavery and friendship. A period of time marked not by cookies and quiet hours beside the fire, but by bloodshed and mutual hostility. They have such violence in the Netherlands. But rather than duking it out amongst one another, Santa and his former slaves decided to take it out on the public. In the early years, if a child was naughty, St. Nicholas and the 6 to 8 black men would beat him with what Oscar described as the small branch of a tree. A switch? Yeah, they'd kick him and beat him with a switch. Then, if the youngster was really bad, they'd put him in a sack and take him back to Spain. Wait a minute, St. Nicholas would kick you? Well, not anymore, Oscar said. Now he just pretends to kick you. He considered this to be progressive, but in a way I think it's almost more perverse than the original punishment. I'm going to hurt you, but not really. How many times have we fallen for that line? The fake slap invariably makes contact, adding the elements of shock and betrayal to what had previously been plain old-fashioned fear. What kind of a Santa spends his time pretending to kick people before stuffing them into a canvas sack? Then, of course, you've got the 6 to 8 former slaves who could potentially go off at any moment. This, I think, is the greatest difference between us and the Dutch. While a certain segment of our population might be perfectly happy with the arrangement, if you told the average white American that 6 to 8 nameless black men would be sneaking into his house in the middle of the night, he would barricade the doors and arm himself with whatever he could get his hands on. 6 to 8, did you say?
You are the worst person I know. I think what I hate most about you is your textbook liberal agenda, how we should legalize pot, man, how big business is crushing the underclass, how homelessness is the biggest tragedy in America. Well, what have you done to help? I work down at the soup kitchen, never seen you down there. You want to help? Grab a ladle. And by the way, driving a Prius doesn't make you Jesus Christ. Oh, wait, you don't believe in Jesus Christ, or any religion for that matter, because religion is for idiots. Well, who the hell are you to talk down to anyone? But you know what? I can forgive all of that, all of it, if you weren't such a bore. That's the worst of it. You're just a big, sad bore.
Christmas time is here.
I hate that freaking song.
I love that song.
Every time they play it. It's a big Charlie Brown song they play
all
the time.
I love that song.
It's sweet. It's melodic, whatever it is. Yes, we're already talking about Christmas, ladies and gentlemen. It's Reese on the radio right here on November 15, 2012. What are we, like a week away from Thanksgiving?
Exactly
a week away from Thanksgiving.
And exactly 1 week away from Black Friday. And people have already started lining up.
It is madness. This is going to be the
A week? You're going to wait online a week? So you're not having Thanksgiving dinner?
Some of them won't. Some of them won't.
What?
And I'm
really? Is a sale that, I mean, come on. What kind of sale are you getting?
I don't know. Maybe they're hoping they'll find a DVD player for $1. I don't know. Do you see something? They never talk about the things that people buy.
Are items that important to your life that you would give up a week, an entire holiday, the most celebrated family holiday of the year?
The concept of family is over, Mary.
So you're sitting in line waiting to purchase objects.
Yeah.
Do you have a job? Did you take a week's vacation to do this?
Some of them did not. But we've become a society of stuff. You know that. That's what this election was all about. It's a society of stuff.
Are they waiting online for Elmos?
It doesn't matter what it is that they're online for. I would love to be there just to watch the mayhem. I would just like to see these people kicking and screaming and beating the hell out of each other for some of the most ridiculous stuff in the world that they have on sale.
Well, you don't even have to see the mayhem. They're already waiting in line. They've already started lines. Is this Occupy retail shop?
Listen to me. Funniest thing I ever saw. This is a great story. The funniest thing I ever saw. One night I'm watching NBC News, and Brian Williams is showing, you know, of course, all the people who are out there on, on Black Friday. Black Friday. And so they showed this one store. The cameras were inside with the doors open and people started running in. So, and you know, you've seen it.
Like a herd of cattle.
Yeah, a herd of cattle. This was the greatest thing I ever saw in my entire life. So the doors swing open. The cameras, they slide open. The cameras catch the people as they flood in. About the ninth person to walk through the door is a guy in a motorized wheelchair with his head tilted to the side with one of those breathing tubes in his mouth, sliding in with a smile on his face. It looked like Stephen Hawking. And as soon as I saw it, I went, holy crap. I couldn't believe he was a part of the crowd. It was like the complete incapacitated person was one of the first people to run through that line. The big motorized wheelchair with the breathing tube and the little motor.
Yeah.
He had all the apparatus on it and everything. He's one of the first guys to roll in.
What store was it?
I think it was Walmart. But it was the most insane thing I'd ever seen in my entire life. I lost it. Because I thought it no one else saw. It was ridiculous.
I thought you were going to say something like, I saw people, you know, falling down and people were just stomping over them.
Oh, no. That would be, for me, that's horrific. Anytime I ever see that, I think that's just kind of their animals. I remember some of the first couple of years in the 90s when the Tickle Me Elmos came out. And you heard those stories of women biting off other women's fingers, you know, and a story maybe just last year.
They were stomping people to death.
Right, they stomped a security guard.
A mother got stomped to death.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear the story last year about the woman who was being sought after because she went into one of the stores with a can of mace? She was macing.
Oh, I think I did hear. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big story last year. They were looking for. Just insanity what these people are doing to get, you know, some of these gift items.
I know the businesses need to make money. You know, I understand that. You're in the business to make money.
Sure.
But you've got to be able to protect the people that are coming into your establishment. And what you're doing is creating mayhem.
I like
because
mayhem.
But not when it's costing people their lives.
Well, no, it shouldn't cost people their lives.
But it does.
I like watching the mayhem.
Someone gets hurt every year.
You don't like the mayhem at least?
Several people.
Just as a spectator.
I think, as a spectator, I think that these people are fucking fools. I'm sorry, it was coming out.
I see.
I couldn't help
it. I think it's hilarious.
They are fools. I don't get it.
I love it. I love the mayhem. I don't like people getting hurt. But I do love the mayhem.
Are
I just love hearing the
story. Items that important in your life? They never have a sale like this at any other time of the year.
You know,
not possibly ever have found this item online for this same deal?
Well, that's what I have to find
any other. Or is it the sport of it for them?
Well, yeah, looking for.
We're spectators, and they're
gladiators.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but guys, listen. They have some amazing deals that morning. Nothing worth risking your life over, and to do that is to risk your life. I got caught in one stampede, and I was at the Buckland, out of Buckland Mall, that Walmart. And I mean, I actually hit the ground and got stomped on and walked over. Don't laugh. How are you chuckling?
I'm sorry.
And this was back in probably 2003, about a year before I met you, and I vowed I would never, ever go back.
To stomp on your big ass. Are you literally, are you kidding me?
I know. I kid you not. I mean, you could get at least 2-3 people through the doorway. Well, it's me, you're not getting too much more than one other person in the doorway. And the glass had cracked.
Because
the whole front of the store was glass.
Listen, you're a big guy, okay? You're a really big guy. I'm
Listen.
Pretty sure hit the ground. Somebody mistaken you for a Cadillac.
I'm surprised no kid came in and shoved a quarter in my ear and looked for a ride.
They still stepped over you.
On me, too.
They climbed over you.
I wish Robin would answer her phone. She'd tell you, because she stood there and laughed.
I had
old ladies climbing over me, dude. But you know what? The deals are unbelievable. Let me tell you about one this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of tempted to go.
In spite of you getting knocked over. And
that was in 2003.
I want to sit here and talk about the amazing deal.
Yeah, please. I want to hear what the deals are. What's the deal this year? What's the big deal this year?
One big deal that they have so far this year, compact Presarios, 17.1-inch laptop computers.
What's the going rate?
$179.
Wow. No, that's a serious size. 17 inches?
Yes, 14-inch. I mean, I'm sorry, 42-inch flat screens. $249.
What?
42-inch flat screen television.
For how much?
Yes. $249.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, we might want to get in on that.
But you know what? I think they may store some of that back for Black Monday.
Yeah, well, Cyber Monday, right? Yeah, Cyber Monday. There's going to be a lot of those online deals.
And that's where I do most of my shopping. Right now I'm trying to sell my iPad.
Yeah, after I would have got trampled upon, I think I would have left, you know, Black Friday to...
No, but that was 2003. That was 9 years ago.
That was what?
9 years ago, 2003.
Honey, that's all it would have took was one time. I don't give a damn if it was 20 years ago. My ass would have been back out there getting trampled upon again.
And I vowed I would never go again until I saw this compact Presario. Or you know, I'll check with Maine. Maybe Maine is going. He goes every year. He's one of those fools that stand out there. Maybe I'll get him to go. I didn't think about that until now, but
that sounds like the thing to do.
He's one of those fools that go out there, but I got to get rid of my iPad first.
Like handle his own and doesn't get trampled by a bunch of mamas. The thing that scared me the most, homo elbow dolls.
You're over the microphone.
That scared me the most was in 2004 that Christmas. When people were going to either get a PlayStation or an Xbox game, whenever one that came out that year, when there were people outside waiting for people to come out after they bought their game systems, and they were being held up with shotguns in the parking lot. That was weird. I was like, okay, this is a mess. It's like, this is just crazy.
But I don't get it. Again, I don't get it.
Oh, of course.
And you know what's nuts about...
No, what the F is on your mind to be like, you know what? I ain't waiting on this line, but I sure as shit am waiting in this parking lot with a shotgun. And when your ass comes out, I'm going to stick you up. What the?
And thank you. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but you know what? What they started doing was.
But you risk your freedom.
You could stomp and rush and do all you want to do to get into the store. Come to find out the next year, the following year, 2004, they made it to where no matter what time you got into the store, they did lotteries.
Right.
Inside the store. You couldn't just go grab and walk away. They had armed security there protecting the merchandise and you had to get a lottery ticket.
Yeah, that, you know what? It's funny because I was when you were saying the thing about the lottery, I was
that
thinking,
is sad.
I was thinking of that movie Jingle All the Way. Do you remember that?
My favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Really? It's my favorite Sinbad movie, not my favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. I thought Sinbad was hilarious in that movie. But that was one of the concepts they had there when they were trying to get the what was the name of the darn toy? Turbo Man.
Yes.
Turbo Man, yeah.
Turbo
Man.
A very good movie.
Oh, Turbo Man.
It was horrible. Anakin Skywalker was in that movie, that horrible acting kid.
Was that the kid that played Anakin?
That's the kid who played Anakin Skywalker in The Phantom Menace.
Wow.
Yep. And he is an awful actor. His first reviews from The Phantom Menace were his mother was doing a talk show or something, like Entertainment Tonight or something, and she said, how do you protect him from all, like, the bad things that happen in Hollywood? She goes, well, I don't let him read, like, things like the reviews. Like, some person at one of the reviews called him Mannequin Skywalker because he was so stiff. I thought that was horrible.
Well, didn't he kill yearlings?
Say again?
He don't deserve an award. He killed yearlings.
Yearlings?
The kids.
Is he in the yearling movie?
No. As Anakin, he killed the kids.
Oh, yeah. But no, you're talking about the one who played the older one. Yeah, not him. We're talking about the one who played the little boy in The Phantom Menace, the first one.
Ah, Phantom Menace, okay.
The little boy
in
Jingle All the Way is the little boy in the first episode one of Star Wars, out of the new series.
Out of the new series, right,
yeah.
Right.
That's the same boy.
The floating go-kart driver.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, what I wanted to let you know in the beginning, if you were trying to figure out what it was that we were playing in the beginning, that was David Sedaris. He's got a bunch of great Christmas stories that are, they are funny, they are hilarious, and that is a piece from a section of his book called 6 to 8 Black Men, where he's talking about the Dutch Santa Claus. That's what it is that you were listening to. So I'm going to play that a couple of times and some other ones from some other Christmas stories that he had, which are absolutely hilarious. I always tell everyone to pick up his books. Don't dress your family don't dress your family in corduroy and denim. Me Talk Pretty One Day. There are a bunch of Santa Land Diaries, which is another one. That's my favorite. In fact, this particular piece that I just played is from Santa Land Diaries, which are absolutely hilarious. They're great reads. You don't even have to like his politics or anything, but they're great. Season's Greetings from the Dunbar Family, which to this day is one of my favorite stories, one of the best stories I've ever read. David Sedaris, I'm a huge fan of as a writer. I read him a lot when I had some time on my hands. I'm sure you remember what I'm talking about. I spent a lot of time reading him, and he kept the laughs coming when I literally had nothing else better to do. So you should check him out. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff to get into. Of course, as you know, today, some of the confidential hearings in the Libya scandal, those took place today. They will be taking place tomorrow. We've got a report from Senator Sexby. Sexby Chambliss, yes. Sexby Chambliss, who gave an exclusive report to Fox today on Special Report. We'll play that audio. We'll also have the timeline of Benghazi, which we'll go through over for the rest of the hour. Plus, we've got some updates on Jesse Jackson Jr. We've also got a story out of the Columbine High School tragedy that took place in 1999, a revealing conversation by Dylan Klebold's mother, who has finally come out of seclusion to talk about what happened back in 1999 in Columbine. We have that. We have a whole bunch of other stuff that we're going to talk about. It's Thursday, and of course, we're going to highlight our 200th show, which airs tomorrow. Tomorrow's our big 200th show, 200 shows on the air. I thought about playing some audio clips and stuff like that, but I don't think I'm going to do that. I think what I'm going to do is I'm just going to have some fun with it. Trust me, I'm a genius at this stuff. We're going to do something amazing. That's going to be a lot of fun, so I want to make sure that everybody tunes into that. We'll try to bring in some special guests, some people that you haven't heard from in a while. We might even get on the air and duke it out with an old friend. Would I do that? Yes, I would. I would totally do that. We'll get into that, of course, tomorrow on our 200th show. It's Reese on the Radio, 200 shows. I'm very, very happy that we're there because it's an amazing feat, at least for me personally. But we continue. All right, we'll be back. It's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Free Sound Radio, bottom of the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. It is November 15th, 2012. A little Red Hot Chili Peppers there. Just talking to Mary behind the scenes here about the music that she listened to back in the day. She wasn't familiar with this particular song.
No,
Red Hot.
Yeah, I knew who they were, but I didn't know the song.
You weren't
okay.
familiar with the song. No.
I just wasn't. I didn't listen to it.
You didn't like it. Yeah.
It wasn't my kind of music.
Wasn't your kind of music.
No.
Mary was telling me how she was a big Mary J. Blige fan back in the early 90s.
Her, Whitney Houston, and Mariah Carey were probably the three women.
Right. And you liked SWV as well.
Yeah.
No, they were. Right? They had a couple songs I loved.
And Mary?
Huh?
Were you a Brenda K. Starr fan?
Ooh.
Yes, I was.
Really?
I have her on my iPod.
And Lisa.
Oh, a huge Lisa, but that was the
80s. I know your kind. But what I'm shocked at is Reese being so in the middle and so entrenched in the epicenter of hip-hop, his taste in music is really, really eclectic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He loves all kinds of music.
One
minute he could be playing Red Hot Chili Peppers, the next minute he's playing, what's the song? Who's the group that sings that song? I Got My Gun in My...
Oh, I listen to Slaughterhouse. Yeah.
I love that song.
Slaughterhouse?
Yeah, Slaughterhouse is... why am I forgetting his name from Jersey?
Slashes?
No. The rapper. Joe Budden. Is Joe Budden one of the guys who used to be down with Murder, Inc., Royce the 5'9", and Joel Ortiz.
Or Royce out of Detroit.
Royce the 5'9". They got a super group together with Joe Budden, Royce the 5'9", and Joel Ortiz. And I'm forgetting the third guy. His name is like Chocolate something or... Cadillac Tie. He's from Murder, Inc. And
right.
They all got together with this murder. They have this song called Hammer Dance that I love. Love that song.
Really?
Yeah, it's a great song. You gotta listen to it. It's a real hot song. But yeah, I'm all over the place. I find amazing about the fact that Mary liked these particular groups. You know, by the way, you said you like Brenda K. Starr.
Yeah.
JC, you like Brenda K. Starr too?
Yeah, I enjoyed. Yeah, I did. I did. I really did.
I bet you that I know more about Brenda K. Starr than both of you.
Like Mariah, when Mariah was a backup singer.
Not only was Mariah her backup singer. But Brenda K. Starr was the person who introduced Mariah Carey to Tommy Mottola. She left Brenda K. Starr at the party and drove off with Tommy Mottola. But here was the trivia question.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Brenda K. Starr have a K in her?
Why does Brenda K. Starr have a K in her name?
Yep. Why does she have a K in her name?
I don't know.
I'll give you a hint. Comic book.
Kryptonite?
Jesus.
No. Brenda Starr was a comic book news reporter. She had her own comic strip in the newspaper. And she couldn't use Brenda Starr because she was going to get sued. So they changed her name to Brenda K. Starr.
Huh.
K means nothing.
Okay.
And who was another famous singer? I wouldn't call her a leading lady now, but in the R&B circuit, she's a leading lady. She was once a backup for Brenda K. Starr.
Ooh, somebody who's an R&B singer now?
She got a nice little hit out about a year ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's that?
What's that?
What's her name?
Kelly Price.
Wow, I wouldn't have thought of that. Kelly Price.
Oh, okay,
yeah. Yeah, she's god-awful in concert, by the way.
Is she?
Oh, god-awful.
Damn, that sucks.
Yeah, not that she can't sing. It's just her show's awful. Nobody just wants to see a girl sit in the middle of the stage and sing her song.
Yeah.
I care less.
Yeah.
That's just boring. And I'm done with that.
Pink's not boring.
No, Pink's great. Anyway, all right, let me get into this thing, because I promised you I would, because there's a lot of stuff that I need to get into. And it is a pretty long audio, but I promised that I would do this today because I think it's really significant. And I didn't get to see this special. And I watched it again today because with the hearings that are going on in about the Libya scandal, I don't think anyone's been able to put this timeline or has had the time to really, really put the timeline together like Brett Baer and the people over at Fox News. Now, if you don't understand the scope of what it is going on, and we sit up here and we talk about it here, there, all this other stuff, but I don't really, really think that the scope has really been laid out until I watched this video that I believe was put out, according to this, October 10th of 2012. This particular piece of tape is so significant because it's undeniable that something is wrong here and there needs to be something done. And if the President of the United States is somewhat responsible here, someone's going to have to take the fall because I'm sure they're not going to let the President fall on the sword here. There will be others who will end up taking the beating here. And look, you know, que sera, sera, whatever will be, as the song goes. So I want you to hear this timeline. It's a bit, but it's important to listen to it from beginning to end so you can really get the scope of it. And I'm looking at it on YouTube. This has only been watched by 2,300 people. But yet it lays out the most important pieces in the story in Libya. So just pay attention. I'll pause it from time to time. I'm not just going to pay 14 minutes worth of it. So I'll pause it from time to time so we can get a scope of what it is that's being said. I'll play a little bit at the beginning because it'll give you a breakdown before the September 11, 2012 attack on our consulate in Benghazi. Here's Brett Baer.
Timing, what the administration knew and said, and when it knew and said it, is really at the crux of this entire story. Let's take another look at the timeline we first brought you 2 weeks ago, now updated. August 2012, an unclassified report called Al-Qaeda in Libya, a profile compiled by the Defense Department's Combating Terrorism Office and the Library of Congress, states that under the direction of Al-Qaeda's senior leadership, Al-Qaeda affiliates in Libya, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, or AQIM, and Ansar al-Sharia are gaining strength, are likely joining forces, and are, quote, currently in the expansion phase. September 5th and 6th, at their convention in Charlotte, Democrats touted a crippling of Al-Qaeda.
Ask Osama bin Laden if he is better off now than he was 4 years ago. Al-Qaeda is on the path to defeat, and Osama bin Laden is dead.
Just 4 nights later, September 10th. A video surfaces of Al-Qaeda's emir, its spiritual leader, Ayman al-Zawahiri, calling for jihadists to avenge the death of Libyan terrorist Abu Yahya al-Libi, killed in a drone strike in June. September 11, on the 11th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, expected protests erupt in Cairo after an anti-Islam video is played on Egyptian TV. The U.S. Embassy in Cairo puts out a statement condemning the video. 8:30 p.m. local time in Benghazi, Libya, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens says goodnight to a visiting Turkish diplomat, escorting him to the front gate of the consulate's compound. Officials say, quote, everything is calm. There's nothing unusual. There has been nothing unusual during the day at all outside.
Very important to note. This is a wire that says nothing is going on in Benghazi, even though there were protests that are already happening in Cairo, which in the grand scheme of things is later, because if you really, even though they were in the same time zone, even if they weren't in the same time zone, it would be a later, it would be early. In other words, that happening there, it should have reached Benghazi already. It had gone everywhere else. But in Cairo, in essence, that's the only place that anyone says something's happening. And it's in the evening in Benghazi. He's meeting with this Turkish guy, escorting him out to the front door, essentially to the street, to the gate, to the street. When he walks out of there, if there's anything that looks peculiar, he runs back. But he doesn't. There's a wire back saying, hey, everything looks calm here. And that only communique could be coming because someone had known, hey, you know, do you know they're protesting in Cairo? I was like, yeah, we got nothing going on here. It's pretty dead. So nobody pays any mind to it, and they keep it moving.
No protests all day. 9:40 p.m. Benghazi time, 3:40 Eastern. Agents in Building C of the compound and the Tactical Operations Center hear gunfire and explosions at the front gate. An agent sees on his cameras that show the perimeter of the compound of armed men flowing into the compound. The attack is underway, an attack that would last some 6 hours. About 5 p.m. Eastern time, the first wire reports cross of an attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. That night, the Romney campaign releases a statement condemning the attacks, but also criticizing the Obama administration for the earlier Cairo embassy release about the anti-Islam film. Also that night, the White House disavows the original Cairo embassy press release about the film. September 12th.
U.S. Ambassador to Libya, our ambassador, has been killed along with three other Americans after a series of attacks.
America's commitment to religious tolerance goes back to the very beginning of our nation. But let me be clear, there is no justification for this. None.
The focus at the Romney press availability, his overnight press release.
Governor Romney, do you think, though, coming so soon after the events really had unfolded overnight was appropriate?
The White House also issued a statement saying it tried to distance itself from those comments and said they were not reflecting of their views. I had the exact same reaction.
The Rose Garden, minutes later.
We will not waver in our commitment to see that justice is done for this terrible act.
By this point, according to sources, the U.S. intelligence community already knows the attack was a terrorist act, has listed it as such internally to unlock resources, and believes it was Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda-linked groups in Libya. Sometime within the next 3 hours, President Obama sits down with 60 Minutes.
I was pretty certain and continue to be pretty certain that there are going to be bumps in the road.
That afternoon, the president leaves for a campaign trip and fundraiser in Las Vegas. 6 p.m. Fox News already has intelligence sources saying Al-Qaeda-linked groups could be behind the attack.
U.S. officials are investigating whether a pro-Al-Qaeda group was involved.
It was a coordinated military-style commando-type raid that had both direct fire and indirect fire, military movements involved in it. This was a well-planned, well-targeted event, no doubt about it.
And we weren't alone.
This was executed by a group that is either associated with or sympathizes with Al-Qaeda.
Roughly 9 p.m. President Obama mentions the Libya attack, but spends most of his time campaigning.
Now, because Nevada is a battleground state, you are aware that we've got an election going on.
From Nevada, the president goes on to campaign in Colorado. September 13th at the State Department. Questions about security.
We did evaluate the threat stream, and we determined that the security at Benghazi was appropriate for what we knew.
And another statement about the anti-Islam video.
There is no justification, none at all, for responding to this video with violence.
September 14th.
The unrest around the region has been in response to this video. We do not at this moment have information to suggest or to tell you that would indicate that any of this unrest was pre-planned.
The President and Secretary of State greet the bodies of the fallen at Joint Base Andrews.
We've seen rage and violence directed at American embassies over an awful internet video that we had nothing to do with. It is hard for the American people to make sense of that because it is senseless.
Later that day on Capitol Hill.
That it's pretty obvious that there's very likely that there was a terrorist organization that affiliated with Al-Qaeda. It was in Benghazi that had at least some role in this attack.
September 16th, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, goes on 5 Sunday talk shows.
This was not a pre-planned, premeditated attack. That what happened initially was that it was a spontaneous reaction to what had just transpired in Cairo as a consequence of the video. And then as that unfolded, it seems to have been hijacked. What we think then transpired in Benghazi is that opportunistic extremist elements came to the consulate as this was unfolding. We believe that it looks like extremist elements, individuals joined in that effort with heavy weapons.
Remember, State Department officials on that conference call October 9th confirmed there were no protests outside the Benghazi consulate before the attack. Zero. And, quote, everything was calm from video surveillance and security officials there. September 17th, Fox First reported the no protest development the day after Rice's appearances, 6 days after the attacks.
An intelligence source on the ground in Libya tells Fox there was no protest and the attacks were not spontaneous, the intelligence source said, adding the Libyan attack was planned and had nothing to do with the movie.
September 17th.
Simply on the basis of what Ambassador Rice has publicly disclosed, does the United States government regard what happened in Benghazi as an act of terror?
Again, I'm not going to put labels on this until we have a complete investigation.
This is, again, the same verbiage that everyone's been talking about the Obama administration, refusing to call acts of terror, acts of terror, in essence saying that it's a terrorist act, using terms like workplace violence, man-made disasters, avoiding the word terrorism at all costs. Everyone's got their marching orders, even down to the State Department, even though that there are reports, but nobody thinks that anyone's going to believe it. And the worst part about this is, is that the White House knows that the other press corps are not reporting the story. They have steered clear away from every part of this, so they've got cover from the mainstream media. They don't care that Fox is reporting the story. Say again?
Why is it that they always, why are they still concerned this, like, they won't label it a terrorist attack because it's still under investigation? And it's like almost every detail of what went on the truth is out there.
Still under investigation. Those are facts.
Yeah, they know it's a terrorist attack.
Whether
they
want to affirm or confirm or whatever that perception,
right.
You know, affirm that that truth is one thing, but everybody knows the facts are the facts.
But again, they had cover from the mainstream media. They know that CBS, NBC, and ABC are not reporting the story, and they could ignore Fox. Nobody's watching that station.
Well,
even though there's one cable news network out there, nobody's watching that.
It seems like they're using that term investigation just to continue to muddy the waters, as though they don't want you to draw conclusions until they finally said what it is that they think happened. Although all of the facts and the evidence it clearly tells the story.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly.
And not only is it telling the story, but you got people sacrificing their careers over a piece of ass so that they don't have to testify.
But no, he's going to testify tomorrow. But you know what it is? It's the
arrogance. They're forcing him to.
But it's the arrogance of this department. That's the whole thing. This administration, it's arrogance. They don't care about telling the truth. They have no intention of doing so. Let me play the rest of this because it gets worse. Trust me. It gets a whole lot worse. And again, Fox.
Pissing me off.
Let me play the rest here. Anyway, here's the rest of it.
Okay.
So you don't regard it as an act of terrorism?
I don't think we know enough.
September 18th on the David Letterman show.
Is this an act of war? Are we at war now?
No.
What happens here?
Well, here's what happened. You had a video that was released by somebody who lives here, sort of a shadowy character, who is an extremely offensive video directed at Muhammad and Islam.
Making fun of the Prophet Muhammad.
Making fun of the Prophet Muhammad. And so this caused great offense in much of the Muslim world. But what also happened was extremists and terrorists used this as an excuse to attack a variety of our embassies, including the one, the consulate in Libya.
And September 19th on Capitol Hill, the head of the National Counterterrorism Center, the only administration official to testify so far.
Question, I would say yes.
They were killed in the course of a terrorist attack on our embassy.
Meantime, CNN had recovered Ambassador Stevens' journal at the consulate.
That the ambassador specifically mentioned the rise in Islamic extremism, the growing al-Qaeda presence in Libya, and said he was on an al-Qaeda hit list.
September 20th, yesterday, the head of the National Counterterrorism Center is up on Capitol Hill, open hearing, says it is terrorism, it was a terrorist attack. There were developments yesterday, let alone what we reported. Just put that aside. This is the New York Times. There was not one story in the New York Times about Libya, let alone the terrorism angle. There's not a story in here about Libya. Now, it just seems strange.
And it should. It should seem strange. Again, that's what the White House is absolutely confident with the mainstream media. It isn't in the New York Times on September 20th after someone in their department in the intelligence agency goes to an open hearing and says that there was a terrorist attack. This is news, especially that the fact that the first UN ambassador since 1979 was killed during one, but not one story in the New York Times. The New York Times is in some rag. This is a huge newspaper, and when I say huge, I'm talking literally. This is a newspaper that can print hundreds of stories in one edition. And not one story on September 20th. That's what Brett Baer's pointing out. Nothing. It seems odd. Of course it's odd. It's an absolute dereliction of duty on the duty of the press. But they know what. It's not like we don't know. We know why they did it. We'll continue.
We have reports that the White House said today that the attacks in Libya were a terrorist attack.
We're still doing an investigation, and there are going to be different circumstances in different countries. And so I don't want to speak to something until we have all the information.
September 21st.
What happened in Benghazi was a terrorist attack.
September 24th.
Then I heard Hillary Clinton say that it was an act of terrorism. Is it? What do you say?
Well, we're still doing an investigation. There's no doubt that the kind of weapons that were used, the ongoing assault, that it wasn't just a mob action.
September 25th at the United Nations.
There are no words that excuse the killing of innocents. There's no video that justifies an attack on an embassy.
Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb and other groups have launched attacks and kidnappings from northern Mali into neighboring countries. Now, with a larger safe haven and increased freedom to maneuver, terrorists are seeking to extend their reach and their networks in multiple directions.
And September 27th.
It was a terrorist attack. The reason I think it pretty clearly it was a terrorist attack is because a group of terrorists obviously conducted that attack on the consulate and against our individuals.
October 8th.
And today, Al-Qaeda's on its heels, and Osama bin Laden is no more.
More sound was obviously added after that hearing today on Capitol Hill. The Libya scandal grows worse. Will it impact this election, and how? The Fox All-Stars discussed that. Well, Steve's point. The shocking thing was the State Department last night on this conference call. We weren't invited to it. They say it was an oversight. We pointed that out last night. They say everything is calm. The ambassador walks the Turkish diplomat essentially out to the road. There's nobody there. They don't see anybody on the video. The security people are saying it's been like that all day. Nobody's around. Nothing unusual all day long. As Steve points out, this official says, they talk all the way through the attack. They talk after the attack. 6 hours long this attack took. And they have all of this information, and yet 5 days later, Susan Rice goes out on 5 TV shows and doesn't have that information, yet these people do. It's such a disconnect.
It's beyond a disconnect. That is utterly damning. There are two scandals going on here. The first is the cover-up. When we now know, and they knew early, there was no mob, there was no demonstration, there was no incentive about the video. That was all completely false story. This was simply an attack of our men who infiltrated and killed our people. So everything Susan Rice said was a confection. It was an invention. And it was, as you showed, it was repeated again and again. You had Hillary Clinton speaking about the video as though the body of the ambassador was lying next to her. Then you had Susan Rice spinning the tales. You have the President of the United States addressing the General Assembly more than 2 weeks later, talking about the video, the insult to Islam, etc. You have this entire story going all along. They're trying to sell the video. They're trying to sell extremism. And they're trying to sell all of this at the time when they know it isn't true. So that's number one. And that's a scandal. And I think it has to do with the fact that they were spiking the football over the death of bin Laden and al-Qaeda a week earlier in Charlotte, and this was a contradiction of it. The second scandal is the lack of security at the site before. So what happened before? And I think that what happened was the administration, it wasn't a lack of money that they withdrew all the support, and they didn't put up the required barbed wire and the fences and all that. It was under the theory, which starts with Obama at the beginning, we don't want to be intruders in the era, we don't want to be oppositional, we don't want to have a fortress in America, we don't want to look imperialist. We want to blend in with the people and help them build. That's a noble aspiration, and that was the motive for having very light security. But it was a catastrophically wrong decision to do it in Benghazi, in a no man's land, in Dodge City, and it cost us the lives of the ambassador and three other Americans. We want to.
There's no other way to put it. Charles Krauthammer, succinctly breaks down exactly what the scandal is. It is a cover-up. There's no other way to put it. It is a cover-up. It is worse than Watergate. It is worse than Valerie Plame. It is worse than Iran-Contra. It's worse than all of those. Combined. Because this, indeed, was incompetence. And then it was just flat-out and bold-faced lies. And for the President of the United States, which what I find the most appalling, that this is the part that always makes me angry about all this, was this ridiculous notion by President Obama that someone is picking on Susan Rice, the UN ambassador. And you have to just listen to the crap he pulls when he's asked the question.
Jonathan Carl. Thank you, Mr. President. Senator John McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham both said today that they want to have Watergate-style hearings on the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, and said that if you nominate Susan Rice to be Secretary of State, they will do everything in their power to block her nomination. As Senator Graham said, he simply doesn't trust Ambassador Rice after what she said about Benghazi. I'd like your reaction to that, and would those threats deter you from making a nomination like that?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to comment at this point on various nominations that I'll put forward to fill out my cabinet for the second term. Those are things that are still being discussed. But let me say specifically about Susan Rice. She has done exemplary work. She has represented the United States and our interests in the United Nations with skill and professionalism and toughness and grace. As I said before, she made an appearance at the request of the White House, in which she gave her best understanding of the intelligence that had been provided to her. If Senator McCain and Senator Graham and others want to go after somebody, they should go after me. And I'm happy to have that discussion with them. But for them to go after the UN ambassador, who had nothing to do with Benghazi, and was simply making a presentation based on intelligence that she had received, and to besmirch her reputation, is outrageous. And, you know, we're after an election now. I think it is important for us to find out exactly what happened in Benghazi, and I'm happy to cooperate in any ways that Congress wants. We have provided every bit of information that we have, and we will continue to provide information, and we've got a full-blown investigation. And all that information will be disgorged to Congress. And I don't think there's any debate in this country that when you have four Americans killed, that's a problem. And we've got to get to the bottom of it, and there needs to be accountability. We've got to bring those who carried it out to justice. They won't get any debate from me on that. But when they go after the UN ambassador, apparently because they think she's an easy target, then they've got a problem with me.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's going to do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You weep for Santiago and you curse the Marines. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. The death, while tragic, probably saved lives. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline. I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way. Otherwise, I suggest you pick up a weapon and stand a post. Either way, I don't give a damn what you think you are entitled to.
Minutes after the hour right here on Reese on the Radio on this November the 15th, 2012, a week before Thanksgiving, exactly 1 week away. I don't have any plans, folks. We don't have any plans. My wife and I, it's our first Thanksgiving as a married couple, and we do not have plans. You're talking some junk about we have plans. You've not discussed them with me, my dear. Now, I've never done this whole thing where I'm doing a radio show with my wife, you know, with, you know, my better half.
Right.
I hate that term. Go ahead. I've never done this whole thing before. So if you don't mind, I'd like to have a little debate with you about that.
Okay.
You claim that we're doing something for Thanksgiving, yet you've not addressed Thanksgiving with me at all.
We are, in fact, going to be dining.
Oh, crap. You set us up for something you haven't confirmed with me yet? Whoa. I'll just put it to you this way. Are we going to be having dinner with who I think we're going to be having dinner with? A certain tall person?
No.
With his shorter wife?
No.
Who I don't get along with all the time, that I always seem to be
beefing
with?
No. We're having dinner with with your in-laws.
Ugh. Really?
Yes, really.
I mean, I've seen their dining room table. Are they going to be able to fit all of us?
Yes.
What was the
they
last?
They have before.
What was the last big dinner we did with them? We had some sort of dinner where we sat at the table.
Easter.
Was that Easter dinner?
I think so. Yeah, Easter.
Yeah, it had to be the last big Catholic holiday, right?
Yeah.
We did Easter together. How many of us sat at the table together? Maybe six?
Everybody. Yeah.
It wasn't everybody.
Myself, you.
Right.
Patty.
Right.
Butchie.
Where did Butchie sit?
He sat at the end of the table.
He did not sit at the table.
Maybe he wasn't feeling well. Okay. So, but everybody else, Katie, everybody.
I know Katie was there. I know your aunt was there.
Patty and Denise.
They were both there.
And my mother.
And your mother. So, okay, this is just the same old crowd. So that's our Thanksgiving.
Oh, okay, this is the same old crowd. Oh, so sorry.
That's all right. I'm just saying. I mean,
if we could have gone to New York, I would have loved to have gone to New York because I know that Zakiya is frying a turkey this year, and
yes,
I've never had fried turkey.
You've never had fried turkey?
No.
It tastes like turkey.
Yeah, but Zakiya said it tastes. Now his sister is a very good cook.
Is she?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's way better than my other sister.
You don't think that? Oh, I can see that.
You better hope she never hears this.
Love you, Christina. You don't think that your sister is a good
cook? No, I think she's a
great
cook.
Time we go there, you're looking for her to cook.
You're absolutely right.
As a matter of fact, I'm looking for her to cook.
Yeah, well, yeah.
She turned me on to dark meat chicken. I would never eat it.
You were into dark
meat
way before then.
No, dark meat always in my men, but white meat always in my chicken.
Okay, but anyway.
It was the only thing that I liked in white meat.
Okay. So the bottom line is.
Except for the other white meat.
Right. So we're going to spend it with your folks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, they love
my folks.
Yeah, they love my company nonetheless anyway, right?
They like your company more than they like mine.
Okay, I still don't believe that.
Really?
No, that's nice of you to say, though, but I don't believe
it. No, it's a fact.
Okay, or whatever.
They've always been that.
So that's fine. So what are we going to have? The traditional...
Dysfunctional, but...
But now, they're Irish, so...
It's an Irish and Polish mix.
Irish-Polish mix, so there's a likelihood that I will eat white food.
Yeah, they don't do any, like, there's, the one thing that I miss from going to either other, you know, other, to my other black friends or previous, you know, partners or whatever, family's house is, generally somebody always make homemade macaroni and cheese, and they don't do that.
Right, so what
they'll be cauliflower, there'll be Brussels sprouts, there'll be homemade mashed potatoes, there'll be homemade gravy.
Right.
There'll be turkey, there'll be homemade stuffing.
Traditional white
sauce.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, there'll be biscuits.
I'll be the first person then. I'm excited to be.
I don't
yams,
miss that at all.
No,
like
there
that.
Will be yams because we eat yams. There'll be...
sweet potato? Can it be sweet potato instead of yams?
Well, they make it in the oven and they put marshmallow on it. And
I probably won't have any of that.
You don't have to. That's fine. Leave it for the rest of us.
That's no problem. JC, what were you going to say?
I don't miss any of that.
You don't miss any of what?
White Thanksgiving.
White Thanksgiving. Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. I love the white Thanksgiving.
I don't miss any of it.
But then again,
your in-laws probably weren't quite like my in-laws.
Now, wait a minute.
If it didn't come out of a box,
you,
can, or microwave, it didn't hit the Thanksgiving table.
Now, though I know most people say, "Oh, white people's food is bland."
No.
Yes, they do, because I even say that too, and I'm white. So, though, my aunt Patty is the best cook by far in the entire family.
Very good cook.
So.
No, I'm excited. To eat her food. I've never ever complained.
We'll have creamed onions.
Oh, okay. All right. No, I'm looking forward to it.
It'll probably be creamed cauliflower.
It would be my
dream
to have a Norman Rockwell style Thanksgiving. I don't want, you know, I want no nigger nonsense, to be honest with you.
I'm gonna have a Norman Rockwell Christmas this year. I'm going to my in-laws.
Are you gonna have a Rockwell Christmas?
Yeah, over at the in-laws.
No, see that works.
Yeah. My sister
won't
she isn't gone yet.
Going on here, but.
No, but nonetheless, I want real food. I don't want anything ethnic.
No, but as I was telling you...
I'm a little saddened by that. I'll be the most ethnic thing there.
Isn't that sad?
Wow. We're having a black Thanksgiving, especially if she's going to be there. But no, with my in-laws, if it didn't come out of a box, microwave, or a can, it didn't hit the Thanksgiving table.
What's that?
At my in-laws?
Yeah.
If it didn't come out of a box, microwave, or a can, it didn't hit the table.
Me, personally, I've got to have some good old white Thanksgiving. I mean, white Christmas, too.
I listen, I've been tapped to cook this year. My brother drops off $100 into the Make a Grocery List for Thanksgiving dinner.
What did you say, Jason?
What does he want? What does he want me to cook? Turkey, ham, collard greens, macaroni and cheese, potato salad, cornbread, chitlins with hog maws.
I'm not having any of that in my house.
Sweet potato pie and banana pudding. Yeah, sweet potato pie and banana pudding.
They're making apple pie, JC, at my in-laws. Apple frickin' pie. Good old American apple pie.
We might buy one of those.
What's that?
We might buy one of those.
That's a good old apple pie. Wingy dingy dingy. That's all I want to hear is the apple pie, damn it. I want the apple pie.
Nobody want a damn pumpkin pie. Ew.
I'm not eating any pumpkin pie. Biatch. Not happening. Of course there's going to be pumpkin pie.
Well, you're going to have your sweet potato souffle. That's where they take their sweet potatoes and they put a little sugar on them and a little pancake syrup and they put them in the oven and throw marshmallows on them.
Ew.
Nasty.
That's just gross.
That ain't candy yams. That's a difference.
Candy yams. Yeah, that's what Mary's in the kitchen making right now. Candy frickin' yams.
That's what's up.
Nobody.
Where's the chitlins to go with it?
What's that?
Where's the chitlins to go with it?
She ain't making no chitterlings in this house. Get that.
I'm black. I ain't a nigger.
She said she's a two. What'd you say?
She said, I'm black. I ain't a nigger. Wow.
That's a delicacy over in Paris.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't do this often, but I have to do it now for my wife. I have to. There's no choice.
Well, I mean, that's traditional slave fare.
Yeah, I know it's traditional slave fare. I'm not eating it, though. She's making that for herself. I don't know how many times she's going to enjoy it, but I won't be eating that. I will not be touching it. You won't get me near it.
You guys got any weird holiday traditions? I mean, well, obviously, you being your first one together, you don't have any yet.
I've never been a holiday kind of guy, you know, since I was a kid. I mean, I've participated in people's sort of holidays, but I've never been like a guy who said, oh, I've got to, you know, we've got to do this thing or that thing for the holiday season. I'm not really stuck on that.
Right.
You know? I've tried it over and over again.
But now you're married, and we start our own
traditions. Yeah, I'm going to start my own traditions. You know, I'm going to start, like, traditions that mean something to me. Like the tradition of, bitch better have my food. It's real, real simple. It's, don't bug me during the football game. That will be a new tradition. I know you watch football, but I don't want you to communicate while I'm watching the football game. Like,
I know, because I don't want you communicating with me.
Not, you know, I have the, I have other traditions that actually take place.
Hey, I got one for you.
Go ahead.
No neck rocking during the game.
Yeah, no neck rocking during the game. And this is my favorite one. I like this one. I think this is my new tradition. She's waving a bottle in front of me. I think it's going to go it's going to go a little something like this. It's going to be, each one is going to go, biatch, get to bed. or this one, or, biatch, bring me a beer.
I miss those days.
How about this one? This one is, biatch, move from in front of the TV.
God, I miss those days.
These could all be Thanksgiving traditions.
These are all traditions that you don't need. You should be thankful.
Or another one, I can always do this one. When she wants to talk about the game when I'm not interested in it, I can always say stuff like,
"Biatch,
stop yamming."
No, we used to have one, especially like when my kids were little. I kept my mom's tradition, and that was every Thanksgiving night we'd put up our Christmas tree together. We always had an artificial one, but we'd put it up on Thanksgiving night.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I kept
it with my kids.
Wait.
What's that?
You put up the Christmas tree on Thanksgiving night?
Yes. Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Now, listen. Now, I know that we always put the Christmas tree up at least 2 weeks before Christmas. I'm not thinking about putting up anything after Thanksgiving is over. I need some recoup time.
No.
Because I'm eating Thanksgiving leftovers for a week and a half.
Yeah, but I don't know why my parents did it, and if I remember correctly, I think a lot of it was because of the commercialism of Christmas, and I think it more so has a lot to do with every Thanksgiving night they show Rudolph and Frosty, the old classic ones, every Thanksgiving night.
Yeah, I'm done with those two. Which one is the one? Oh, that was the one. Which is the one, the stop-motion animation and Santa Claus is coming to town? That's the one with Heat Miser, right?
Right.
Okay. And my favorite song from that era.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even. You know what it is? I got to play it because it's such a good song. Oh, there it is. Look at that. All I did was type in three words, and the song popped right up. And I fell in love with this song. I don't know why, but it sticks with me forever. Give me a second. Okay, it's about to play. I love this song. Wow, it only got 39,000 hits. This is a classic Christmas song. What is wrong with America? What is wrong? It got 259 likes and one dislike. Who's the piece of garbage that did
really
not like this?
I really am a mean, despicable creature at heart, you know. It's so difficult to really change.
Difficult? Why, look here. Changing from bad to good is as easy as taking your first step. Put one foot in front of
the other.
And soon
you'll be walking out the floor. Take one foot in front of the other.
And soon
you'll be walking out the door.
You never will get where you're going if you never get up on your feet. Come on, there's a good tailwind blowing. A fast walking man is hard to beat. Put one foot in front of the other. And soon you'll be walking
across
the
floor. Put one foot in front of the other. And soon you'll be walking out the door.
Better than that song right there.
That's right. Put one foot in front of the other. And soon you'll be walking across the floor. That was my jam.
Biatch.
You know what my favorite one was, though?
I just want to know how you segued into that. How you went from biatch, get my food, biatch, get from front of the TV, biatch, get me
no, well,
a beer. Biatch.
We talked about my family tradition, and that was putting up our tree on Thanksgiving night. And I told him a lot of it has to do with the commercialism of Christmas, but every Thanksgiving night, they would play the classics, Rudolph and Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Those shows, but I really, really liked this particular one, this particular show, which was Santa Claus is Coming to Town, which was the stop motion animation film. It's one of my favorites because of that song.
Right.
And that's how I stick with
you. You can't love that song and then say, biatch, give me something to drink. Don't you want a hot cocoa, nigga?
No, a hot toddy, heifer.
No, a hot toddy. I'm not drinking that stuff. Anyway, I just wanted to make that point because it was one of my favorite. It's, I don't know. I can't say Thanksgiving is one of my favorite times of the year because I don't want to meet up with people that I don't really know. I don't like strangers during Thanksgiving. I'm shaking hands, talking to people, making idle conversation with people. That's the reason why I never ever was a big
fan. No,
we
just want to get together, get drunk, eat lasagna, and play trivia, pop culture trivia.
JC, I'll tell you that. That's one thing that I always enjoyed about going to JC's house. I go to his house, and he whipped my ass at every trivia game and every other video game. But bottom line is, that boy's lasagna. I don't know what that was to me. I'll eat that lasagna all day. That might
be. Yeah, it's a nice little ghetto lasagna. It's something I learned in nigga Italy.
You know what you got to do? You have to find a way.
It's called Nigitaly.
You're going to have to find a way to...
freeze it and send a pan?
And me up some.
Why don't you just...
Freeze it and send a pan, right?
What's that?
Freeze it and send a pan.
Just
send me the recipe.
No, there's something about the way JC makes it. It's sloppy and nasty, and I love it.
I'll send you a pan and the recipe.
It's like a Sloppy Joe version of lasagna. That's what makes it so good. It's got so much goddamn cheese in it. And I don't eat that much cheese, but there's something he does with the cheese.
It's he puts regut in it, which is what most people don't.
I'll tell you that. He niggerized
it.
It's my mama's. It's my mama's recipe. All my cooking I learned from her.
Now I'm going to get on a lasagna challenge.
Now, listen, I'm telling you, Mary, I'm going to tell you something.
JC, send me the recipe.
Mary, listen.
I'm making it Sunday.
Mary, listen to me. Listen to me. JC. All right,
yeah.
Give me the promise right now, okay? But listen to me, Mary.
Yes, I do.
Right, listen to what I'm telling you. JC, send her the recipe.
If
via your email.
Ass ever wants to do anything again, you better think that I know what I'm
listen
doing.
Listen to what I'm talking about. Send to the recipe.
Uh-huh.
Here's the recipe. I want you to hear something, Mary. I'm going to say this out loud. Okay? Okay? I have a serious problem with bad lasagna. Okay?
Yeah.
It bothers me. I take it from JC knows.
Yeah.
The thing I've never asked you to make because I take it personally. And if you haven't made it before, don't bother.
I have made lasagna before.
Has it come out good?
Yes.
Was anyone killed?
No, but there may be somebody killed this on Facebook.
I've never complained about it.
Hey, Mary?
Okay.
Even at the fanciest of restaurants in New York City, he wouldn't even eat seconds.
Cooking?
I'm not suggesting that. I'm just telling you that if a woman makes me lasagna, you have to understand that you are held to a particular standard.
I would have hoped to have been held to a particular standard when married.
Well, if you don't make the lasagna right, I make scrutinize. And I don't literally. I'm probably the worst.
Oh, you did the right thing. Listen, Mary, you did the right thing marrying him before you gave him the lasagna.
Yeah, because
now it'll cost him to get out of it.
That's going to be a deal breaker.
It'll cost him to get out of it now. So you did the right thing by marrying him before you gave him the lasagna.
Recipe.
Now, you see, you have to see her face.
Oh, now, you know what?
I'm going to put you up to the challenge.
Thank you.
You said you're going to make it before Sunday?
No, I'm making it on Sunday.
You're going to make it on Sunday?
Yes.
JC
sent black ass to the store to help me buy all the shit that we need. I'm going to come home and.
All right, you heard her, folks. On Monday night. Nah, Sunday morning,
because
I'm definitely
going to
post it on Facebook.
Sunday night, all of that.
Yeah. Hey, but before we go to commercial, Reese,
we gotta get
I was trying to tell you, I was trying to tell you my favorite Christmas cartoon, and I'm surprised this one that you that I don't know whether you liked it or not, or assume you, I'm sure you saw it, and it's one that I would have thought that you would have at least liked. Damn it, my phone. I can wait. Do you remember the one about the mouse that screwed up the town's clock that was calling Santa?
Yes.
What?
The mouse that screwed up the town's clock for Santa clock.
Yeah, he wrote a bad letter to Santa, and Santa said he's not coming to that town. And then they got the clockmaker to build a clock tower with a song that's going to play at midnight on Christmas, that Christmas bells are calling Santa. And a clockmaker who had a mouse had a son got up there and screwed up the clock and screwed up the song.
Never seen this before.
You gotta be kidding! It's by Rankin
Bass.
Find
out the name of it. Find out the name of it and let me know, because I'd love to see this. I don't remember this story at all.
Wow, that was a good one. That was a good one. A lot of black folks in it too.
No,
it's really not. No, really? All right, find out what the name of it is. Anyway, we'll be back. Stick around. We'll be right back at Teresa on the Radio. I've got to get in this Jesse Jackson story and, of course, this Columbine story. Dylan Klebold's mother speaks out about what she found out and what she was thinking when she found out that her son was responsible for the shootings that were happening in Columbine, Colorado. We'll be back. Stick around at Teresa on the Radio.
You are not someone else. Someone else is someone else. You are you. It is you. You are you.
Slick Rick and Asher is on this jam. Slick Rick and Asher is on this jam. Slick Rick and Asher is on this jam.
You are you.
There's nothing that you can do about it. The one thing that I'll figure out is
you are you.
Forget it. There's no way around it.
You are you. You are you.
No matter what I do to try to fit in, there's nothing I can do about this body I was given. I'm blind and I am skinny with my mom's McConnell skin. The Scottish side and my father's schnoz to go with it.
Nice nose.
My hair, yeah, I can try and dye it. And contacts could change the color of my eyes.
You are you.
That would only mean that I am lying and openly denying it's not who I am. I tried to be too big for my britches and couldn't, regardless of my kilo wishes. A couple more inches and I would be in business. But still I'm waking up 5'10 every Christmas.
You are you.
My fingerprints is what makes me different. It took a little bit, but I can finally admit it. This is my appearance, this is my face. Looking in the mirror, there is nothing I can change. Might be a little strange the way you can see my veins, but if we were all the same, the world would be plain Jane. It would be lame, you would never learn a thing. So go against the grain and let these people know your name.
You are you.
There's nothing that you can do about it. The one thing that I've figured out is
you are you.
Forget it, there's no way around it. There's nothing that you can do about it. The one thing that I've figured out is I try to represent. Forget it, there's no way around it.
Rick,
Rick, the ruler. All kids pulpit, all getting a girl. Due to hip hop, invisible pulpit of the world. Nothing to play with, skipping all the way with it. Conveying who we all are, how we all fit in this mosaic portrait. Feces of a brother, homosexual being last pieces of the puzzle. Or religion who read divine time verse. Could God want straight fucks get their mind right first? Then weed out legitimate seed crop. Fuck with hero wool, feed like intrigued wine. And politics harvest the chatter. Dissect good from garbage that a lot of.
You are you.
Not I doubt true, but allowed to. What amounts to? That's just what adults do. Keeping with the pace of barbarian. Keeping gaudy jewels in the face of America.
You are you.
There's nothing that you can do about it. The one thing that I've figured out is
you are you.
Forget it, there's no way around it. There's nothing that you can do about it. The one thing that I've figured out is
you are you.
Forget it, there's no way around it.
You are you.
Besides, it's all about your mind, your will and your drive and what's going on inside. The size of your heart is what sets you apart. If you aren't using it, I suggest that you start.
You are you.
Think hard, take a walk around.
ever lie.
You are you.
There's nothing that you can do about it. The one thing that I've figured out is
you are you.
Forget it, there's no way around it.
You are you. You are you.
There's nothing that you can do about it. The one thing that I've figured out is
you are you.
Forget it, there's no way around it.
You are you. You are you.
Here on Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, November the 15th, 2012, 33 minutes after the hour. Actually, sitting up here going through Facebook. Sally D finally is getting some backlash about the people he has purged from his Facebook. I guess he unfriended them.
Yes.
And
Mike unfriended people too. He said,
did Mike?
Oh, Mike did.
Oh,
yeah.
Mike did.
Yeah.
He unfriended anyone who didn't believe and didn't agree with him politically.
He unfriended some people that were, going overboard and were just purely, you know. Let me get you what he wrote. Hold on.
Was this they were saying they were going overboard about the election or about the win or? Was there something in particular he was going on? He was basing his grievance with?
That they were destructive. That they were working towards destructive. Hold on, I'll tell you. Mike writes, "I defriended a few. I'm open-minded, but when people are actively involved in the destruction of the country, it's time to treat them like." What is that? Seditionist.
Yeah, seditionist.
Or maybe he meant to write Satanist, or what is it, seditionist?
No, it's seditionist.
Okay. And then Sal writes, bingo was his name, oh, Mike, spot on.
Wow, so people are really, really taking this unfriending thing, I guess, to that level. I thought about it today, and I looked at a couple of people, but I'll admit, there are like three people who don't agree with me, maybe even more. There are maybe four people. Okay, seven people.
There's a lot of people that don't agree with my views that I'm friends with on Facebook, but, you know, they're not trying to stick their views down my neck, and I'm not trying to stick my views down their neck because I know that it would be a total waste of time for both of us. So it is what it is. I did unfriend some people.
You did?
I did.
Did you unfriend the new Black Panthers?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Mary is friends with the new Black Panther Party.
But the new Black Panther Party is not down with Barack Obama. They may be down with their own crazy shit, but they're not down. They want to do the same thing that Texas wants to do.
They want to be their own country. Yeah.
They want to make their own country, make their own rules, follow their own shit. Only have their people live there. Okay, well, go ahead.
What were we going to say?
Obviously, as there's the country is falling to shit.
How many times are you going to say shit? Four times already.
My bad. At least I didn't say the F word.
You said that three times already.
I only said it once.
You said it three times.
I said it once.
Okay. JC, what did you want to say?
You know, I kind of thought this unfriending thing was like, I mean, who cares if you unfriend me? You're not going to hurt my feelings.
Right.
But one of my very best friends unfriended me like a month before the election because she stated something with regards to Romney, and then they were talking about the whole gay thing, the whole gay supporting gay marriage, and I then went and posted on her post the Barack Obama video stating that he believes in marriage between a man and a woman. And initially he didn't support it.
Hmm.
And she unfriended me, and I didn't know it.
Oh.
I didn't know it for a long time.
I had a girl that was a previous colleague of mine from quite a few years ago in the home building industry. I actually took her to her first lesbian club. She was married with two kids, and I took her to her first lesbian club.
It ended up turning her out.
And it ended up turning her out. So now she's married to a woman. You know, she's raising her two kids. They have a beautiful family. I have nothing negative to say. But it wasn't something that I said about gay. I don't even know if it was something about gay rights or not. It probably was. I think it was about the Catholic Church and whatever. I said something, she posted something, I said something, and then the next thing I know, she had unfriended me, and I said, well, goddamn, if it was that easy for you to unfriend me, then so be it.
Well, but this person I'm talking about is someone that I grew up with. I've known him since I was, known her, I should say, since I was 14.
Dude, I took this chick to the lesbian club, and she ended up being with a female and finding herself, you know? saying that that's
she owes you a lot of things.
She always wanted to be. She just never knew, I guess, and it took that one night out in D.C., you know.
I hold you responsible.
It was a crazy night, too. Like, she popped her tire. She was driving, like, this ragtop Mustang, really nice. You know, she had good money. She was, like, the IT director or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she popped the tire. We had to go, like, somewhere in Southeast where we got towed to change the tire. I mean, it was
okay.
Crazy.
Oh. But you're saying
that,
she fell in love.
Well, that's not the same girl that she. That's not the.
But she met the girl.
Now,
she realized her true
she
self.
She realized that, you know, with the woman is where she wanted to be, is where she felt comfortable. And okay, that's great. But because I say something on your Facebook page, I'm the one to take you out there, and
right.
Then you want unfriendly.
And not only that, but my friend now won't even answer my calls. My kids call her auntie. I mean, that's how close we are. My kids call her auntie. She's friends with my kids still. They still call her aunt. Well, her name happens to be Robin, too, but they call her Auntie Robin, and they talk to her. And
got to put an H on your chest and handle it. You just got to keep it moving. You just got to. I mean, there's nothing else.
She's a lifelong friend of mine. And but you know, it bothers me. And it bothers me because I didn't know. And I didn't think much of it. I thought that, like, I mean, come on, if somebody unfriends you, they unfriends you. Go to hell with it. Move on. But this one affected me because we were close growing up as young teens from middle school into high school. And then we worked together at our first jobs together and so on. And we lost some touch for a little while. But then when we ended up working together for the last 10 years when I worked with her, I brought her into AAA. And, she got mad at me over a Barack Obama comment, and it's like, she won't even answer my calls.
But, JC, if that's what people do, it's, you know, be thankful.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
They did you a favor. They took themselves out of your life. And you didn't. Who needs that kind of person in their life anyway? What are you upset about?
Yeah, and that's the decision that. I mean, she made her decision based upon something like her loyalty to a president she doesn't know and probably would never
and
ever
that
get
doesn't
to meet.
Give two shits about her.
Yeah. Again, with the language.
Oh, sorry.
Anyway, let me get to this point. Anyway, this is a story that I talked about earlier in the hour. If you haven't read it, it's still, for me, it's extremely compelling. I remember where I was on April 20th, 1999. I'm not sure the rest of you do. I only remember because I was in Atlantic City at Caesar's Palace, sitting at a bar. Yes, it was early in the day. I don't care. But,
yeah, those of us that know you are very
well. Well, what was the incident?
Let me just read the story. In the 13 years that have passed since the Columbine High School tragedy, when 12 students and one teacher were killed, shooter Dylan Klebold's parents have remained largely silent about living a parent's worst nightmare until now. In a shocking confession, Sue Klebold claims that on the day of the massacre, on April 20th, 1999, when the shooters, when she discovered that her son Dylan was one of the shooters, she actually did this book. She prayed that he would kill himself. She says, quote, I had a sudden vision of what he might be doing. And so while every other mother in Littleton was praying that her child was safe, I had to pray that mine would die before he hurt anyone else. So
wow.
This, they're saying, in the Klebold silence comes from a part of Andrew Solomon's new book, Far From the Tree, an exploration of atypical children. Solomon spent 11 years researching the book, which contains a controversial chapter on children who commit crimes. In the months following the Columbine tragedy, many people demanded to know the reasoning behind Eric Harrison Dylan Klebold's actions. Desperate for answers, they blamed their parents, assuming the shooters must have been brought up in some unhappy, even violent home. But Solomon claims the Klebolds are loving and kind. Susan Klebold, they said the Klebolds still live in Littleton. Wow, they never moved out. In the same house they lived in back in 1999. In fact, when Solomon traveled to interview them for the book, He slept in Dylan's old bedroom. In speaking to the Klebolds, yeah, I know. In speaking to the Klebolds, he found them very open, a stark contrast to the other parents interviewed for the crime chapter. Tom Klebold said, "We are able to be open and honest about those things because our son is dead. We can't hope for him to do something else, something better. We can tell a story a whole lot better when you know it's ending." Columbine survivors reached, If anything, the Klebold's testimony in this book proves that the power of parental love overcomes the unimaginable. When asked what they would say to Dylan if they could speak to him now, Tom, his father, says, "I'd ask him what the hell he was thinking and what the hell he thought he was doing." Sue's answer is a revelation. She says, quote, "I would ask him to forgive me for being his mother and never knowing what was going on inside his head, for not being able to help him, for not being the person he could confide in." Although I find that strikingly odd that the woman would say, "I hope he'd just kill himself," but you know what? I'm envisioning myself here, and I'm looking at this from a very, very odd perspective. Okay, I'm looking on the news. There are kids running out of the school. Somebody calls me up. "Reese, Caleb is the guy shooting in the school." What would run through my mind at that particular moment? Well, first of all, I'd be shocked. Knowing the egomaniac I am, oh my God, they're going to rip me in the press. What are they going to say about me now? What are they going to say about me? Okay, everybody get your statements ready. Now, I probably would not be thinking, should my son... I hope that son of a bitch kills himself. Because I'm not visiting him in jail. I don't know if I could ever think that. It sounds like it's...
And we're thinking, I hope he kills himself so he doesn't hurt anybody else.
Well, I understand what she was saying, but, you know, she's coming from a perspective of... See, this is why I think it's phony. I think what she's truly saying is, he's already killed himself. Right? He's already killed himself.
Basically,
she's
yeah.
come to terms with that. So some 11 years later, it's pretty easy for her to say, "I hope he kills himself." It's essentially what had happened. I'm sure when it was happening and she found out that her son was shooting up the school, the one thing runs through your mind is self-preservation, reputation, especially if you live in a little town like Littleton. You run into your mind and saying, the neighbors are going to kill us. We are going to be pariahs in our own neighborhood. We're going to have to move. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? This kid shot other kids in the neighborhood. We can't live here anymore. This guy has fundamentally changed our lives. We're going to have to go into hiding.
This little son of a bitch.
Yeah, that's exactly what's running through your mind. Don't try to fool me and say, oh, my God, I just hope he kills himself. It's after the fact 11 years later. You can say anything you want. And he didn't kill himself, to be honest with you. He had his homeboy shoot him. And he shot his homeboy. I mean, it's suicide in essence, but he didn't shoot himself. He didn't pull a Private Pile in Full Metal Jacket.
No, he did not.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, is it an important story? I don't know. I don't want to hear this story from the perspective of his mother and father. It's clear they knew nothing about this boy. It's clear that they didn't. I don't care how much this guy researched this story. You know, you can talk to people who have been shot. You'll probably get some perspective there. You can talk to some people who were nowhere near being shot and ran out to school and talk about their fear. But you're never going to get into the inside the heads of these boys. They were loners. The two of them played together or hung out together. They're the only ones who know what was running through their mind and what they wanted to do or why they did it. And they're both dead. We're never going to get any answers. This is the kind of reporting and the kind of book writing that I cannot stand. You know, and I'm touchy about this. not to go off topic, but I'll give you an example of what I mean by why I hate this. I have never known the story about the fisherman in Gloucester in that movie, The Perfect Storm. I didn't know this story. I heard about it, saw this big. I'm kind of a storm watcher when it's a movie. I like disaster films. So I heard about this movie, The Perfect Storm. Didn't know anything about the story. Didn't look it up. I didn't want to know anything about it. Went and watched the movie and find out that everybody dies. You know what made me angry about that movie? It's because everything that happened on that ship, in essence, is a fabrication. We don't know anything. Not one person survived to tell the story of what those men went through. And all we watched was someone's interpretation or adaptation of what they thought happened. So this guy can write a book all day. We'll never know what Dylan Klebold was thinking. The only thing we're writing about is what anybody would be thinking if they found out their kid was running around killing people in a mass way. What anybody would think. So it's not much of a story, and it's a worthless book to write. Sorry to tell you that, folks. It's a stupid book. I'm not interested in it, nor should you be. If I read something like that, I want answers. And I want to be able to talk to some living person that actually committed the crime. That, my friends, is a good story. All that other stuff is just garbage. Anyway, another story that's in the news, I don't know whether or not you guys heard it, but Jesse Jackson Jr. Jesse Jackson Jr. Sources close to the family of Jesse Jackson Jr. Well, let me just get to the whole story. Sources tell Fox 32 News in Chicago that Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. is willing to give up his second congressional district seat. Well, they know that he's going to spend some jail time. They know that he is going to lose the seat anyway. He's going to have to give it up. But he's not going to give it up unless he's given disability. Disa-frickin-bility. Jesse Jackson Jr. was reelected to his 10th term. 10th term. But sources say he applied for a disability package, what could be his only income if he resigns. It is expected to take a lengthy couple of weeks for Congress to approve or deny the request. His house on 72nd Street in Chicago is part of the federal government's investigation into allegations that Jesse Jackson Jr. misused campaign funds. Sources say Jackson allegedly spent some $20,000 to renovate and buy furniture for the family's home in Chicago, not their five-bedroom Victorian in Washington, D.C. The basement in the Chicago home has five televisions and a number of printers and copying machines, sources say. Most of the equipment was purchased in the mid-90s when Jackson was first elected. But because of flooding a couple of years ago, most, if not all, was replaced. They believe that this is due to campaign funds. Sources close to the family tell Fox 32 that Fox 32's Darlene Hill that the congressman may be reporting the use of the space in the basement as his campaign headquarters. Fox 32 called the House Ethics Committee in D.C., and while they would not comment specifically on Jackson's case, the federal campaign finance law states a campaign committee may not rent space in the candidate's home. Yeah, of course it says that. The Wall Street Journal reported Tuesday the congressman's wife, Alderman Sandy Jackson, that's right, his wife is an alderman, is now being investigated because she is a consultant for Jackson's campaign operation and is paid monthly. Sources say the alderman met with the Justice Department one time and was asked a couple of questions unrelated to any federal investigation involving her or her husband. As you also may know, a Rolex watch is also part of the case against the congressman. Sources say the federal agents want to know where Jackson got $42,000 to pay for a watch he purchased for the woman he was having an affair with.
Oh, she's not just a friend anymore.
Yeah, that's right, because before it was reported that she was a friend.
Now he's
sleeping with her. Yeah, exactly. Hey, get out of here. It must be Dennis Nesbitt. Jesus, what's up?
Hello.
Dennis?
Yeah, you were breaking up. I couldn't hear. Okay. I didn't hear the cue. You know, the problem is they're stupid. What you do is you don't hire your relatives to work for you. You ask another member to hire your relatives, and you hire their relatives. And that perfectly passes the smell test and the ethics and the law committees. That's what they do on the Hill.
Do you really think that's ever going to happen with the Jesse Jackson family? Are you kidding me? The most, I mean.
I know. Can you tell me, can you put on your black hat for me, please?
Sure.
What the hell church was he ordained in to begin with, the father and the Reverend Al Sharpton and the rest of them? What congregation do they represent, or they just get a mail order reverend and everybody kisses their ass?
I believe that Jesse Jackson was ordained in the what ministry was it? It was the
Farrakhan ministry.
Dig in your pockets. It was the Church of the Holy Corruption.
Oh, okay. That makes sense now. I take it all back, Jesse.
What's...
And I'm going to tell you something. Back in 1988, you know, what I did was collect tomorrow's antique today. So living near New Hampshire, I'd make a pilgrimage every 4 years to scour the different campaign headquarters to pick up my buttons and stickers to save them for a collection for decades later.
Right.
You know, Jesse Jackson was the only one that wanted money.
Out of all of them?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
You wanted to get a button. Just, wait a minute, you can't leave here. You got to donate. See you later.
You got to donate.
Yeah, up in Manchester. You had to donate before. You're doing him a favor by wearing the friggin' things or to vote for him, they would think. But
right.
You got to give us money first. Scam-a-roo.
Hey, and lastly, let me get into this story real quick. Anybody remember when Barack Obama said this?
If you like your current insurance, you will keep your current insurance. No government takeover. Nobody's changing what you've got if you're happy with it.
Yeah, President Obama's election victory ensured his Affordable Care Act would remain the centerpiece of his first term in power, but that has left some business owners balking at the extra cost Obamacare will bring. Florida-based restaurant boss John Metz, who funds approximately 40 Denny's and owns the Hurricane Grill and Wings franchise, has decided to offset that by adding a 5% surcharge to customers' bills and will reduce his employees' hours. With Obamacare due to fully be implemented in January of 2014, Metz has justified his move by claiming it's the only alternative. I've got to pass on the cost to the customer. The fast food business owner is set to hold meetings at his restaurants in December, where he will tell employees that because of Obamacare, we're going to be cutting front-of-the-house employees, front-of-the-house employees, to under 30 hours effective immediately. John Metz, who also owns, also owns the Hurricane Grill and Wings, which has 48 franchises around the country, and falls under the umbrella of his firm, REMC Restaurants. I think it's a terrible thing. It's ridiculous that the maximum of hours we can give people is 28 hours a week instead of 40, Metz said to the Huffington Post. It's going to force my employees to go out and get a second job. Obamacare requires businesses or franchises with more than 50 workers must offer an approved insurance plan to pay a penalty of $2,000 for each full-time employee for over 30 workers, which is absolutely insane. So, which pretty much begs the old line.
If you like your current insurance, you will keep your current insurance. No government takeover. Nobody's changing what you've got if you're happy with it.
So it doesn't matter. It's a wrap. That's our show. Dennis, you called in a little late, buddy.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to make dinner. And a question for Mary. Does she think when you're making a chicken soup, white or dark meat is the better?
Mary?
I know she married dark meat, but we're talking about soup.
When you make soup, which meat do you think is better, the white or the dark meat?
For chicken soup.
White. She says the white meat.
But why does she pick the dark meat?
She says she likes dark meat now because my sister made it for her.
Oh, I thought dark meat because she married you, but that's another story.
Yeah, I thought so too, but unfortunately.
And another thing, you know, you can't pick your relatives, but you can pick your friends. Just because you're related to somebody doesn't mean you're family.
Absolutely right. JC, last word before we get out of here.
Listen, you've got to use dark meat, especially in soup. White meat falls apart.
Oh, I love the fall apart stuff. We'll see you guys tomorrow at 3 Soda Radio. Same bad time, same bad channel. Tomorrow, our 200th show.
200.